Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we begin an April series called Cityscapes, about the 20th century New York City skyline. How has the city changed in the great building boom of the last 10 years? Call us. What building or spot most defines the changes in New York City for you from the last 10 years? And don't make this only a complaint about all the big ugly condos that have gone up. You can talk about that. But what else is reshaping your neighborhood? Call and talk about particular buildings, particular spaces, particular empty lots at the moment where things aren't getting completed for the better or for the worse. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Because during the construction boom that's really ending now, the New York cityscape changed radically. There are new buildings, new parks, new landmarks, and lots of unfinished condos. So call us. What building or what spot most defines these changes for you? 212-433-WNYC. And we'll be doing this every Wednesday this month in conjunction with the WNYC Culture Department. They are making short videos with leading New York City architects of striking spots in the city for our website. And we have the first two of those videos on our page now, and they are really cool. We'll talk to one of the architects who made it in a minute. So go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And what building or spot most defines the changes in New York City for you from the last 10 years? With me now are New Yorker architecture critic Paul Goldberger, also former dean of the Parsons School of Design, and author of the book Up From Zero, Politics, Architecture, and the Rebuilding of New York, published in 2004. And also with us is the architect Hugh Hardy, called Mr. New York by architects throughout the city. Some of Hardy's notable projects include the Brooklyn Academy of Music redesign. Actually, I don't have that list in front of me, but he's done so much. And he is the principal and founder of H3 Hardy Collaboration Architecture. He did the renovation of Radio City Music Hall a decade ago, and it is his video contribution that's on our site right now and is really, really cool about the Lower East Side and a little bit of Union Square. So, Hugh Hardy, welcome to WNYC. Thank you so much for doing this with us.
Thank you.
And Paul Goldberger, good to see you again.
Good to be here, Brian.
And
thank
Paul,
you.
Do you want to start with the biggest picture overview you can? The view from the plane coming into LaGuardia, what new buildings or new structures or new spaces define our city skyline now?
Well, the view from the city right now, Brian, is actually, for me, it's one of hesitation, because what I see now is what isn't happening as much as what is. Ground Zero, where there were great hopes, but many of them have been dashed, postponed, or compromised. And then an awful lot of very kind of so-so stuff that we've done over the last few years. You know, it's been a time when we've built a huge amount, but most of the really good stuff has been small, so you're not going to see it from the plane going into LaGuardia, actually. What we're dominated by is stuff that is unfortunately not the very best.
And I think this actually brings us to one of Hugh's points about scale. Can we play the second Hugh Hardy clip? This is clip C2. Tell me when you have that ready. This is some of the audio from Hugh's video on the site. And it's kind of a juxtaposition of part of the Lower East Side.
It's amazing to see this transformation of the city from the point of view of scale. Here is this one block with a single building. Look over here and see how many different buildings were put together in the same dimension. And that was the scale of 19th century New York. Here's the scale of 21st century New York, and heaven knows what's going to follow.
All right. So what were you looking at there, Hugh?
It's a major development down on Canal Street. No, not Canal Street, Houston Street, in which an entire block has been dedicated to fairly mundane stuff. Mundane because it just repeats and repeats and repeats without any specific point of view. And it's right next door to the Lower East Side jumble from the 19th century, in which each plot had a different owner and a different attitude about what architecture was.
So you're looking at stone and brick on the one side and skinny buildings and glass and steel.
Glass and steel, but of course...
And not only much taller buildings, but like whole block buildings.
Whole block buildings. And every now and then there's a gesture made to the past by pasting on a piece of masonry, but it's fairly half-hearted. And no one's fooling anybody that somehow it fits into the context.
Well, of course, it becomes, unfortunately, a new context.
I'll say.
So it sort of the context we're trying to fit into is harder and harder to find. Hugh, I think you make a really wonderful point, because in a lot of ways, part of the problem today is as sites get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
It's not just that buildings get taller.
No, that's
almost the least of it. It's that building plots get bigger and bigger, and that variation that we're used to on the streetscape that makes it so wonderful to walk down a great old block in New York is gone.
And the video makes it so clear, because you see the skinny buildings and you see the block-long buildings. It's a really well-done video, Hugh. We're glad we gave you one of our little flip cameras here. 212-433-WNYC. We'll get to some of your calls in a minute about what buildings, what spaces have transformed New York in the last 10 years. But I want to play another clip from this is from the other Hugh Hardy video, and this is a view of what he calls the skinny buildings around Union Square.
This is an astonishing assortment of buildings, these little pieces of cake piled up against one another, each a different style, each the result of a different point of an inflated market that could make such skinny buildings valuable. All of these except one maintain their original facade, and it's quite astonishing assortment of opinions about how to make a building.
And I think even without seeing the video, Hugh, just about all New Yorkers can envision those old skinny office buildings, not to mention residential apartment buildings that used to populate the city almost solely. So why, if Paul, you find the new glass, steel, and big block buildings so much more ugly, are they coming to predominate new construction? Is it money and scale, or is it that aesthetics have changed and you guys are out of touch, or what is it?
I think it's a little bit of everything, actually. There's no question, by the way, that the predominant change in the cityscape in this whole boom is not any single building project, but the collective impact of all this glass. You know, glass was really very beautiful when it was in contrast to stone. I mean, when they built the Seagram Building and you had this glass gem with old stone buildings around it, it was absolutely wonderful. It really was a jewel. Now, however, you can't build a whole city out of glass. Something's wrong. Something feels so brittle all the time to it. And that's where we seem to be going now.
Although I kind of like the Chicago skyline.
I do too.
Had the good fortune to take the Chicago River architecture tour last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really struck by, as somebody who doesn't really love the glass look, how much I like the overall effect in downtown Chicago, partly because they managed to have a different tint on a lot of the buildings. So some of them look blue, some of them look red, some of them look clear,
and
it was much more aesthetically pleasing, at least to my eye.
They've done better stuff than we have. I think with that, absolutely. Their standards have actually generally been higher. I hate to say it as a dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker, but in fact, architectural standards on the average are higher in Chicago.
And Hugh, what is it when you're designing and you know you are trying to please the client? Does everybody say, "Oh, build me a glass and steel building now," or why does it get done this way so frequently?
Well, again, it's the marketplace. There are interesting discussions in housing, for instance, as to whether people want floor-to-ceiling glass or whether they want windows so they can hang up grandma's portrait.
What do you do with grandma's walls?
Yeah, you need small windows in walls. Yes.
I see.
What do you do with grandma when it's floor-to-ceiling glass? So in housing, although, yes, lots of stuff has been built because it gets attention that's all glass. There's a strong question as to whether that's the future. In office buildings, it's obvious that you sell the view, and you can even make buildings with lots of corner offices by wiggling around, and you pay the extra expense for bay windows because you can crank up the rent of these individual offices. And so there are different kinds of markets, but what Paul was saying before about street life here, the streets are the glory of the city. It is the experience you treasure. And I think that there's a different experience at street level than there is when you view these things, these buildings, from a distance. And by and large, they're critically received only as objects in the distant view, whereas in fact, you're experiencing them walking down the street. And there's a tremendous difference between buildings that acknowledge the grid and play with it and those that do everything possible to violate it.
This is WNYC. Brian Lehrer with you. The beginning of an April series called Cityscapes. We'll be talking about how the city has changed in various architectural respects and what that means to the fabric of our lives, how it's changed over the last 10 years of this astonishing building boom. We'll talk about it every Wednesday, and it's really in conjunction with the WNYC Culture Department, and they've got their own section of our website for this project, so you can go to wnyc.org/cityscapes to see Hugh Hardy's videos and some of the other ones that'll go up there and some other cityscapes material. We think you'll really like this at wnyc.org/cityscapes. Or if you can't remember that, you can always get there from our page, wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We've got those videos up there, too. And let's hear how some of you think the city has most dramatically changed in the last 10 years of construction. Ray in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ray.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
If for some reason, the vernacular architecture, the lower buildings between 14th Street and 34th Street are something that I really miss. I moved to New York almost 30 years ago, and I used to walk down to the New School from 34th Street. And this is the area where the Flower District was. And it's all, you know, a lot of it's going, and we're getting that kind of canyon-like feeling of condos on either side. And that's really, you know, there's a lot more to say, but that's just my, my resonances with the city that I really miss. It's not so much really it's really the smaller, the vernacular architecture that I'm missing more and more.
I hear you. Paul, anything briefly on that?
He's right, of course. I mean, that neighborhood's changed hugely. Although a lot of the mid-blocks, there's still a lot of really wonderful older buildings, many of which have been converted into lofts and gone from industrial to residential. And that's actually a very good development.
And new kinds of offices there.
Right.
I think there are a fair number of
it's a very mixed, right, a lot of them there.
Area.
So it's a very mixed bag then, both good things and bad.
Steve on 45th Street, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. I live on 45th and 8th Avenue, and that area has undergone a particular change in the past few years. And the thing that I'm conflicted by is that I really like a lower scale, but at the same time, all the shops that are along that area that are the smaller scale buildings are pretty decrepit. And part of me really enjoys sort of seeing these new structures go up, you know, with the wider sidewalks and sort of, you know, there's more services that are offered now other than sort of porn. But, you know, that's sort of where my conflict lies. So I was just curious what they would, what the opinion was on this.
Hugh Hardy, you want to get in on this?
Well, I think it's important to keep both the small-scale stuff and the larger. It's the juxtapositions that are so characteristic of New York. I've always enjoyed big, tall buildings next to little, tiny buildings. It's the uniformity I think we're all objecting to. You don't want to walk down the street and have it the same at the end as it was at the beginning. It makes journeys around here extraordinarily long and depressing. The parts of the city where everything is uniform, you don't associate as Manhattan or any, and that's why the movement to Brooklyn and the small scale of Brooklyn is such a delight after you've been confronted with the developments here. It's the juxtaposition, I think, that we need.
Right.
And, of course, the way Landmarks works, it's either or.
And thank you for your call. I want to make sure we don't make this series only about Manhattan.
Sure.
This is a Manhattan-centric conversation right now, to be sure. But we're going to bump some of our Manhattan callers to make sure that we have some lines if anybody wants to get right in. And we don't have much time today remaining in this segment, but we'll definitely do it in coming weeks if you don't get in today. If you're in Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island, the Bronx, New Jersey, Long Island, Westchester, I mean, there's been construction all over the region. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Paul?
Brian, that last caller did, though, make a point that has relevance everywhere, which is the dilemma we often have between sleaze, which we'd like to get rid of, and things that are too big. And isn't there a way we can clean it up without going gargantuan?
And Disney.
Right.
Marcia in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I was all prepared to hate the Time Warner Center before it went up, but I must say I think it's done really a great job of making that area a focal point in the city and a real magnet. And that's not only because I come down on the A train and that's the first place I do a lot of things. So that's a great thing. I think it's an elegant building, despite all the glass. But the thing that disturbs me is the hideous kind of, I can't even call it Bauhaus, faceless stuff that's going up. Like that one skinny building I think somebody referred to on Union Square. Union Square, which has a couple of absolutely exquisite buildings. It's not that one wants uniformity. You can't build the same kind of building, but it would be nice if there were some kind of harmony rather than this gaudy, cheap stuff.
Thank you, Marcia. And I'm so glad you brought up the Time Warner Center because, Paul, you were talking to us off the air and contrasting the impact that has had with the Hearst Building just a few blocks away, which you actually like much more.
I think the Hearst Building is a much better piece of architecture, but I have to admit that Time Warner has, as Marcia said, had a pretty positive effect on things. So it's that frustration architecture critics always have when we have to admit that real life sometimes trumps quality architecture.
Well, Time Warner, of course, has public access, and the Hearst Building, you don't.
Yes.
It's extraordinary interior, but you can't get in to see it if you're just walking down the street.
True.
Let me get Ashley in Greenpoint in here. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Brian. I've lived in Greenpoint for almost 3.5 years now, and I've watched as exponentially the number of what they refer to as finger buildings have shot up. These tall, skinny, you know, 8 and 9 story condominiums that are one condo wide, not to mention the Magic Johnson product that went in here, this giant condominium that apparently has now gone bankrupt. And it's just, it's really stunning how this quaint little part of Brooklyn is suddenly being overtaken by this modern architecture that, in witnessing it go up, I've watched some pretty shoddy construction, actually.
Well, there you go. And I want to play one more clip from one of Hugh Hardy's videos on our site. This is, you know, it's a visual thing with the buildings there, but here he says something very important about change.
Well, the whole subject of change in New York is a complex one. The city is nothing but change. You can't freeze a city. It's too expensive. The only way to pay for New York is by developing it.
Now, I'm sure some heads turned out there, Hugh, and we don't have much time, but the only way to pay for New York is by developing it? They don't like that in Williamsburg right now.
No, of course not. But the city has to be renewed because it's always falling apart. It's the nature of the constructed world. So how do you pay for the reinvestment that's required in all the surface ducts, all the substructure, all the utilities, and so forth? And it's not obvious. If you look at Greenwich Village and think what has happened there in terms of investment, it's absolutely extraordinary, and it's all taken place without high-rises. How come? What has made that possible? Well, of course, it's increasing the density of how those buildings are used. They're no longer single dwellings. They are all apartment houses. Even the little brownstones are. Many, many people using the place. Therefore, you can afford to go from gas to electricity.
Right. You can't freeze a city. I think that's the key thing. And I don't think you even want to, even if you could afford to.
And that has to be the last word for today. But the good news is we're going to do this every Wednesday. And there are five Wednesdays in the month of April. Our Cityscape series on the changing city. Also, the Cityscapes web pages at wnyc.org/cityscapes with lots of great stuff from our culture department. Hugh Hardy, architect extraordinaire, thank you so much for contributing some videos to our project.
this is a great opportunity to have people see what's around them. I congratulate you.
And Paul Goldberger, New Yorker architecture critic, you'll be here every week.
Thanks, Brian.